Good morning, everyone. I don't know if some of you will end up listening to this during our Sunday service this morning, or if this will mainly be something that people can listen to later online, but I miss all of you and appreciate understanding how we are all trying to be physically safe while still being proactively connective during this season. And this is part of our new reality right now, and I hope that all of you continue to be mindful for yourselves, be thoughtful of other people, and I am very confident that we'll get through this together as God's people and as our very unique and wonderful church family. For this morning, we're going to be looking into our scriptures and the Psalms, and especially in the Gospel of John. And these scriptures made me think a lot about times that I have spent before. Many of you know I've worked as a church and organizational coach, especially around issues of poverty ministry, but a lot of times that automatically has things to do with organizational change. And so a colleague of mine and I have spent a lot of time thinking about ways that we can help people think about encouraging change in a constructive way. And he has this very novel question in particular to help give people an illustration of being comfortable with change and recognizing when they might take it for granted how things can call for change, whether we'd automatically realize it or not. The very simple question is asking people when they're gathered in a group, how does it feel to be wrong? Some of you may have answers that pop into your brain. It feels discouraging. It feels embarrassing. It feels frustrating. Maybe it feels like a chance to do something new, depending on your emotions about it. But probably most people associate negative things with it. However, the trick to this question that my colleague would always point out is that what we are inclined to answer is not actually how it feels to be wrong, but how it feels to find out that we are wrong. Because actually, how it feels to be wrong is normal, exactly like any other thought, like it might be when we are right. Because until we know, we just think that we've come up with a good answer for whatever it is that's in front of us. And we can be wrong before we find out and before we have any feelings about it. And I know that this is really true because I've watched the faces when we've asked this question, and I've heard the groans of response when we turn the question on people and say, this is what we're really talking about, because they feel wrong when we change up the question for them. And that's obviously not the point, but it's inevitably part of what happens, and I think it's part of what can make the question really engaging and challenging and thought-provoking for people, which I really appreciate it. And our story in John today puts us right in the middle of all those same types of tension between questions of right or wrong, whether people think they or someone else is right or wrong, what people feel like when they see themselves as right or wrong, and who has authority over right or wrong. And we see Jesus show up into all of that tension in a way that I think can give us a lot of insight about dealing with this in our own circumstances and with our own thoughts and feelings in life, especially since during the season of Lent. Because this is when we're trying to be vulnerable and brave and face things that are wrong and difficult in our lives, but do so in the hope of Easter to come that will make all things right. One of the things that's fascinating in how these questions are, for me, is that they're obviously complex enough as it is, but Jesus' encounter with the woman delves into them in the full spectrum of human experience. It goes from big picture things like social, historical, cultural dynamics to the deeply intimate and personal for just the woman herself. In the section that we read today, it's a really long passage, so we shorten it up a little bit. We can see especially the big picture element, how whole groups of people worship God depending on their culture. right? We have the woman talking about worshiping on a mountain or worshiping at the temple, whether you're a Samaritan or you're a Jew. Samaritans, by the way, we maybe are especially familiar with them with the Good Samaritan parable of Jesus, where again, there's an unlikely hero, and Jesus is kind of trying to make a point about how we should break down some of those barriers and assumptions. But Samaritans are people that were seen as the rest of the Jewish community as kind of, for lack of a better word, half-breeds. They were people that would have been hundreds of years before connected to the Israelite kingdom. But when the Israelite kingdom was conquered by the Assyrians, they were scattered all over the place. And they ended up mixing with the other cultures a lot more in their families and in their descendants. And so that also encouraged their worship. This happened also before the conquest, but their worship became a little bit more mixed with pagan rituals and things like that, and they didn't have access to the temple. And so they worshipped God on a mountain. And this mountain had significant background in the history of the Jewish people, but the people in Judah, which was the other kingdom that broke from Israel very, very early in the history of Israel, and they had Jerusalem there and the temple in their capital city, and they weren't conquered as quickly. And they were taken together as a community into exile when they were conquered later after Israel, and then they were able to return and rebuild the temple together as a community. And so they felt like they had kept the purity and the sanctity of Jewish worship and Jewish legacy, whereas the Samaritans, this mix of ancient Israelites and other cultures that had come together, were kind of a corruption of that and weren't carrying it on. And so they had that real animosity. And yet the Samaritans did see themselves as still connected to Israelite heritage, still worshiping the same God as their Jewish neighbors. And there was that tension there. And so Jesus, trying to show that there was this other way of worshiping and looking beyond that, would be a really powerful statement. But not only is there these concerns about historical factors, cultural factors, social factors that the woman is thinking of as representative of the Samaritan people, but if we look earlier in the story, we see that also the woman that Jesus is speaking to has a lot of things in her life that have the same elements of acceptance and rejection, people seeing someone else as acceptable, doing things the right way, being a part of the community or not. And she's the target of whether or not things are being done the right or wrong way. So she can feel not only that she's an example of her people when it comes to worship, but she also has her own very powerful individual experience. And some of you may be familiar with this, or if you look back in the scripture, Jesus identifies that the woman who came to the well by herself, which would not be normal. Normally, women would come to a well and gather water together. It'd be a social event. It'd be a way of being safe. She had to come by herself. And it's probably because Jesus identifies that she has had many husbands. And currently, she's with a man who's not her husband. And so she was probably ostracized by her community because of that. And she wouldn't be able to have the same social experience with the other women. And so that's why she would be able to come to the well alone and be encountered by Jesus that way, to have this type of conversation. And you can tell in her pivot when Jesus identifies this right before the passage that we read, that she feels that same sense of rejection and wondering about what's right or wrong for herself and for her people, with the same types of feelings, because she connects Jesus talking about her personal experience to then her national and cultural experience and thoughts about worship. And it's important to remember, too, by the way, that this woman probably did have her own agency in her decisions, but also at that time, she would have had a lot of people with power over her life that may have impacted her decisions, too. So it wasn't necessarily that she was just a horrible, kind of promiscuous person or whatever we would think, that she had also probably had some things done for her or to her by men or other authorities in the village that affected her relationships, and that would have impacted her experience as well. Now, I don't know which type of experience that we just talked about, the big picture or the personal, that you might relate to most in this story. Maybe many of us don't have this woman's exact story about all of her different husbands, and so we connect more with Jesus reframing people's assumptions about right and wrong when it comes to worship or national issues, right? Especially for worship, we're a congregational church, so we've learned a lot about the breaking off of Congregationalists from the Church of England, and we think about other ways that the church has changed over time and how we try to have our own type of worship as Congregationalists, even as we see other churches doing other things. Even today, I think there's a lot of feelings between different types of churches based on the style that they have, the music that they do, the size of a church that there is, what types of ministries a church prioritizes or not, who's allowed to be included in a church or not. We know that all of these debates broil around us all the time, and we all have feelings about it, depending on which things that our church feels most closely connected to, and if that makes us inclined to feel judgmental towards another church, or if we feel like other churches are judgmental towards us. And so there's that social thing that probably a lot of us can see our own version of in our culture, but maybe some of us really do have things in our past that others have looked down on us for, or that we wish were different. And so we can also even relate to the woman with her personal experience and how Jesus talks about her relationships as well. And we should, by the way, notice that Jesus challenges the traditional notions of right or wrong, not only in saying that there's a different type of worship than having a debate over the temple or the mountain, but also in how he encounters the woman personally. Because just the fact that he's having an interaction with her and the types of things that they discuss is a really powerful statement by Jesus about what he feels he's willing to acknowledge as right or wrong versus the cultural expectations. Because it would have been seen as very scandalous for Jesus, especially as someone who is trying to establish religious authority, to have a one-on-one conversation with a woman, especially a woman who other people saw as having issues with her relationships with men. The assumption would be that Jesus is putting his own reputation at risk and maybe showing himself to not have, at the least, very good judgment and at the most, very good character. Jesus was risking that to make sure that he had an encounter with somebody who needed encouragement and needed a new vision. On top of that, the fact that he's willing to talk to her at all, but especially about things that have to do with following God and worship, even at that national level, is conferring on her a status that normally people would say women would have no place in having any of those types of discussions and talking about those types of topics. And so that Jesus is willing to engage with a woman, even one-on-one, and show that he thinks that she is worthy of being interacted with, and that she is worthy of engaging in even these big ideas about how we worship God, how we connect with God, how we live out our identity as God's people, is Jesus blowing up normal notions of right or wrong in his culture so that he can offer something new to this woman. And Jesus doesn't just challenge those common misconceptions about what should be right or wrong. He also offers a transformational vision for new possibilities in life with God to replace those problems that he is challenging. Believe it or not, I think that what he offers both for the world at large in his comments about worship and what he offers the woman for her own identity and future have some really important links that can be really meaningful for us today too. See, we see towards the end of our passage that the woman is empowered and offered a new chance at relationship with her village. Another cultural trope for women at that time was that they were not able to be witnesses in court or in other legal proceedings. And Jesus sends her to be a witness about who he is to her entire village, not only as a woman, but as a woman who was probably not thought of well specifically in her village because she had to go to the well by herself. And yet he empowers her and says, "Your word will be authoritative and meaningful about me. You're going to represent me to the people in your village. And that's an amazing thing that he would tell her effectively, that that's the type of person that he sees her as. And then that point of contact and her being able to share something powerful with other people in her village allows a new connection. There's new dialogue. There's new shared experience with her bringing the village back to see Jesus. And presumably we would see that relationship continue to grow and flourish where before she was ostracized. And I also think that Jesus saw more in her, we can see, because of what she talks about for herself. At the end, she tells the other villagers that a reason they should come and believe that he is the Messiah and someone that they should encounter is because he told me everything that I ever did. That's the common translation in our Bibles, which could seem a little bit weird because the main thing we see Jesus tell her is things about her that she could feel embarrassed by or victimized about, that was part of what caused her being separated from the rest of her village. But the Greek language there, past tense verbs in Greek are way more complicated than they are in English. It's not about like a one-time thing in the past. It tends to be much more complete and holistic. And so I think actually probably a really good way of translating that sentence instead is not, he told me everything I ever did, but he told me everything about myself. He told me everything about who I am. And so we can hear that Jesus probably not only engaged with her about that thing that she was embarrassed about with her relationships with men, but also she clearly felt opened up. All the other possibility, positive, empowering, engaging that she could have for herself, she felt like Jesus opened up. And of course, that would be an amazing, powerful thing for other people to hear and think, Jesus could do that for me too, even those things that I'm worried about or embarrassed about. And Jesus creates a new vision for worship with those same types of elements, worshiping God in spirit and in truth. Truth is the ability to be our true selves, just like the woman experienced, to bring everything about ourselves for transformation and having to hold nothing back because God loves us and will transform it into something beautiful and powerful for us and for those around us. And being seen not only for the things that might need to be transformed, but for the things that we're not always willing to see in ourselves, but that God actually loves and thinks is beautiful and wants to give an outlet for. And by the way, I don't think that that means that being truthful in worship is a restriction of worship into something small and specific, but in fact, it's actually the opening up of worship and the opening up of relationship so that we can have a place for all of our gifts and all of our passions that God gave to any one of us. And worshiping in spirit is God not being contained by physical or geographical structures or stylistic or format structures. No structures can control God. God is in control and sovereign over all of that. And so we can have connection with God who is unbound by those things. So just like the other people that the woman spoke to, they know it for themselves now. They got to go and be with Jesus, not just hear her words and absorb it as information, but they got to have their own relational encounter with Jesus, not someone else's formula, their own experience. And that's what's offered to all the world, God's own experience for anyone, not any formula telling people this is the only way to encounter God, because God does not belong to any one group. And here's the thing about that how does it feel to be wrong question. It highlights how our information is relational, just like what Jesus is emphasizing in his challenges of our normal conceptions of right or wrong. To realize we are wrong, we need information outside of ourselves, someone else pointing out effectively, or something else pointing out that we've gotten something mistaken. And that might sound negative, right? Because we don't want to be embarrassed, we don't want to be put on the spot. But don't forget that the inverse question has the exact same issue. How does it feel to be right? Until we're told or affirmed that something is right, until we're encouraged about that, it's just normal. Any of our thoughts we could be found out to be right or wrong. And maybe that helps us appreciate the relationships that help us frame our assumptions about right and wrong inside our own head. Feeling wrong can be hard, but in the right relationship, it helps us grow and improve and see new, better possibilities that we can work towards if we can be encouraged to let go of any fears of embarrassment or shame. And being affirmed as right can be empowering and encouraging. But when we figure out that it needs to happen in relationship, especially relationship with God, that helps us be humble and be ready to affirm what's right in others rather than feeling competitive and only wanting to see what's wrong. And then to have grace when we do see something wrong so that we can make things better together. To make all of this very real this morning, I'll point out that I think everything that's happening with the coronavirus right now can give us a chance to explore God's new life amidst our own assumptions about right and wrong, if we'll let it. I'm sure all of us can think right now of things in society that relate to right or wrong about coronavirus stuff, right? Whether we're passing on true information or rumors, whether we're scapegoating people or being gracious and helpful, whether we're doing things that are really prioritizing being ready to care for people who are vulnerable in all of the ways that are needed, both around sickness and around our restrictions of meeting together and traveling that might leave some people vulnerable with food or with income and things like that, or if we're only setting things up for a privileged few, and it'll only work well for them, right? All those different ways. We can be mindful of that, especially in our response and trying to be people of faith that are thoughtful and caring. So we should have those conversations, but all of these assumptions about right or wrong, I think, are also more personal, right? Personal, but that worship question from the verses. What is worship in spirit and truth for us? What is it to worship in spirit and truth, especially if our relationship with our building and our time slot and how much we're able to see each other change? Will we see this as tragedy or opportunity? How can we be creative? How can we be thoughtful? How are we being proactively connective and relational as God's body on earth? Especially because there are so many other things that can happen during times of isolation and fear. So many ways people can feel lonely. So many ways people can be vulnerable because they don't have the things that they need. So many ways that people can be forgotten and fall through the cracks. How can we be proactively connective? Have a right or wrong that's not just about physical safety, which is important, but about all of the other things around it too. And how can we have encouragement about living this out, even in small practical ways? Doing check-ins over the phone, staying active on Facebook and doing discussions about things that we're worried about, or things that in the Bible or in worship songs that people post or in other devotionals that can give each other encouragement and a sense of shared experience, even if we can't be in the same building as much. And initiating support. What are the things out there that are taking care of people who are going to have trouble with childcare, with food, with rent, with who knows what else? Because we're changing the way our lives work, and it's hard to adjust to that. I think we can try to find ways to step into that, to have a new conception of right or wrong besides the initial questions that might be pushed with this at first. I encourage all of us during this time to be fully vulnerable, be our true selves, whether that means that there are times that we're doing amazing, brave, right things, or whether that means sometimes we're doing our best, but we get something wrong. God has grace for all of that. Let's stay in communication. Let's be willing to risk and maybe make a mistake as we're trying to stay in touch. But most of all, let's believe that God will be with us to show us, just as Jesus changed old conceptions of right and wrong into new visions of life together in worship and in our personal experience. Let's see what we can do together to have God care for our things that are wrong and transform them and empower the things that are right and see amazing new connections happen even under difficult circumstances. I'll keep you in prayer and hope to be in touch with you in lots of different ways this week and in weeks going forward. Grace and peace.